Welcome to Create Photography. This is Daniel Sig. In today's episode, I will have a conversation with Basel-based photographer Bastian Peter. Bastian is a street photographer based in Basel, Switzerland. Bastian has a passion for storytelling and also cinema, both of which influenced his photography. He is also the founder of the Swiss Street Collective, a collective of street photographers focused on establishing street photography as an art form in Switzerland. Bastian, welcome to Create Photography. I look forward to speaking with you today about you and your photography.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks for having me. It's an honor. I'm very excited too. Thank you.
So, Bastian, your family is running a mask making studio in Basel. How did this influence your photography and maybe even becoming a photographer?
It made it certainly easier to become a photographer in hindsight, because my parents were both photographers and artists, still are. Mask making, it's a big tradition where I come from, of course. And it has a lot to do with visuals and expressions, and you got one shot to express a feeling or a message or something. And also my father's a painter. I don't know how that plays into it, but it probably does in some capacity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was surrounded by art. I grew up with it. So it certainly made it easier, made it more natural, I think. I never decided now I will become a photographer, you know. It's mm-hmm. more like a progress, and then you sell your first print or something, and then you think, you know what, maybe I can, or I'm allowed now. Now I'm allowed to call myself a photographer, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always a bit, it's not that I have learned this in a school or something, you know. Mm-hmm. So I never was sure really what to call myself, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so how did you get specifically into photography and maybe even more specifically into street photography?
Well, like I said, the visual arts were always surrounding me. Plus, on top of that, I always was a big cinema fan, or movies in general, not only cinema. And in European or in international cinema, that's true. You always have a rule in screenwriting. I'm not a screenwriting student or something, but I'm just into the thing. The rule says, show it, don't tell it. Mm-hmm. So in cinema, yeah, that means like, don't just have an off voice or a narrator explaining every little detail, or the characters themselves. More like show it visually, you know. That's a big component of what cinema or movies is. Mm-hmm. Or also stage plays in some sort. I don't know, you know, just, yeah. And in photography, it's, for me at least, pretty much the same or similar. Because you do have words in cinema and music. In photography, you have nothing. You have one image or a series of images. Maybe there is a context and you have the option to explain some stuff or give it a title, you know. But for me personally, the more you explain or you know, it robs the imagination, and it limits maybe the viewer to a certain degree. So yeah, I digress. I'm sorry.
No, no, that's good.
I don't know. A few years ago, 2018, I started shooting with my mobile phone in the city. I can't remember why or what was the event that triggered that. But a few days later or weeks, I decided I need a real camera, a better one. So I I bought this affordable Sony camera from the Alpha series. Very, very small camera. Not too flashy, not too expensive. And I started taking photos, you know. And a one-hour trip in the city became a 6 or 7 hour trip. Or a whole night even. And then you have suddenly 500 photos. And you realize you like two of them. So I wanted to get better. For me, there is no good or bad in art, you know. It's difficult. It's I think when I'm satisfied with a photo, that makes it good for me. And but that's now not a rating, because I think it's a very personal thing, and the viewer has to decide. But yeah, I started to collecting, or archiving the ones I liked. And yeah, a good friend of mine from the States, from the Boston area, she told me I really should stop with the selfie nonsense on Instagram and all this stuff. Nothing in self-portraits, of course. I still have some of them. And she said she gave me the advice to show people what I shoot on the street. I was very nervous, but then I did that, and I didn't even know the term street photography, you know. I didn't know any of the players. I didn't know any of the legends. So I got into that scene on Instagram, and it's a very loving scene, a supportive community. I had the feeling of somebody has my back, and I'm not alone in this. And yeah, you're starting to exchange, I don't know, backgrounds or advice or methods, you know. And then I saw myself as a street photographer, a bit. Yeah. Yeah.
I want to go back to, you know, your influence by cinema and cinematography, which is something I can see in your photography for sure. You mentioned, you know, it's obviously about storytelling, but are there other things about the cinema that just kind of influences your photography? And maybe also, what are some of the cinematographers or that you particularly like?
Good question. Very good question. So I think, storytelling it's a big expression, or a big word, but that kind of plays into my problem. So for me, it's not a problem, but people get told a lot. They need to find their own style, you know. And in the extreme cases, this results into a portfolio which every picture looks kind of like the same. So there are people who are only doing this, people who are only doing that, and that's totally cool and respectable. Maybe I just didn't find my style in that case. I don't know. But there are so many things, you know. There are so many reasons to take a picture, and I can't just blend out a part of those reasons. So I want to be able to make photographs that are in the storytelling part, or also I would love to take some humorous shots, or you know, some moody stuff, or even some pictures without people. You know, every kind of street photography I would love to explore, and cinema is so as a comparison is so I don't know the word has so many different genres too, you know, like in photography or in street photography alone. So I wouldn't want to name special cinematographers, but there are certainly some wild cinema movements like the new wave in from France from the 50s and 60s that brought a whole new thinking, a whole new way of expression. And it's great to see how you can a moving picture, also at least before the digital movies, was just an illusion. It was a collection or a movement of various photographs, you know. Mm-hmm. So the composition is very important. You can, without saying one word or even knowing the characters on screen, purely through the composition, you can achieve certain emotions or feelings, or you can provoke a certain expectation from the viewer. Mm-hmm. You know, you could, for example, film or photograph a scene from various angles and have the scene have totally different meanings.
Mm-hmm.
The same scene.
Right.
You know, you could theoretically make it so that it's dangerous or ominous, and the other one, it's like an everyday scene.
But, right, right.
Right, yeah, you know, the you choose the framing and you choose, yeah, of course, on the streets it's not very controlled and you have to be quick or fast. And
right.
But as a movie director, it's all in your hands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, even though the one is controlled and the other one is not, street photography is not, cinema is, in most cases, mm-hmm. at least, it's very comparable.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can train your eye for a certain mood, I think. I don't know. Sometimes it works, sometimes not. And you pick up on stuff. You can't walk around and pick up on everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have a certain mood and that fits in with what you see on the streets. It's right. going to happen anyway. You just need to open your eyes and really see it. And then mm-hmm. be quick enough to capture it, if there is even something that interests you. Yeah. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, that's a great answer. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And so along those lines, you know, talking about kind of the creative process, I'd like to talk about your creative process a little bit and how you go about your compositions. You already talked about compositions a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you tend to visualize your shots, or do you tend to use maybe more of an intuitive approach, so more like go with the flow type approach, or do you kind of see, you know, I assume at some point you see the shot that you want to take or the photograph you want to take, but how do you go about that when you're out in the streets?
Yeah, another good question. You know, to be really honest, a visualized shot is one end, and a totally blind shot, as I like to call it, where you don't even look at the camera because you don't have the option, is the other pole, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm constantly moving between those two. Because when you have, let's say, an example, you see a couple sitting in a restaurant and talking, and you on the next table or something like that, or in the area, you have a little bit more time to make more shots because, you know, something about the scene attracts you. And when you're walking, for example, the alleys, and someone happens to walk by you or underneath a certain light or something that you like, you don't have time to visualize the shot. Mm-hmm. You only know there is something that could be cool, you know, in the end mm-hmm. result. And that could be something that is really interesting. Most of the times it's not, but it could be. So you take the shot, and then you don't have the time to even out the edges or composite it as you like. And you try your best to keep and to capture as much of it as you can. May it be in distance, you know, as much as you can, or in composition, or as many photos of it that you could capture mm-hmm. at that moment. And at the beginning, I was very hardlinery. I thought I should be more a hardliner when it comes to cropping my images and correcting angles or something, you know, in post. I did it, but I had a bad feeling about it.
Hmm.
And today, I don't care really, you know. Your photograph should express that what you yourself as a photographer wanted to express with it. And if you crop it a bit, if you crop 10% or 50% or even much more, or if you straighten the picture or whatever, it's your photo. It should, the end result should become that what you felt in the moment, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is visualized shots, and there's not, and there's much in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's a great lead in to my next question. What's a little bit about editing your photographs. And so you addressed some of that with, you know, basically saying,
yeah,
you think it's okay to obviously edit some and crop and adjust lines and so forth. How do you go about editing your photographs? And maybe before we go into not so much technical detail, but, you know, one thing that I'm always curious about is, you know, when especially with digital cameras where you can, you know, obviously take a lot of photographs, do you look at them right there? Do you look at them the next day? Do you keep them for a while and see if what works and what doesn't work? Because I can just tell you from my perspective, I tend to delete images probably too early without really letting them, you know, kind of sit or rest.
Yes.
You know, not that it's right or wrong, but I'm just curious what your process is. You did say you tend to take a lot of images when you go out, maybe at night or something, but what is your process there?
Well, first of all, your last part of your question, I keep them okay. for months.
Okay.
And I just, a few weeks ago, I deleted a few photos from 2019. But in the meantime, I watched all those photos several times. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I didn't delete what I thought wasn't good at the time. Because in this time since then, I saw stuff that didn't said much to me at the time. And now it does. Or it mm-hmm. it has. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it's you're doing yourself probably a favor if you don't delete just right after the shoot and let it sink in and, you know, sleep about it and watch it from time to time. I mean, there are obviously photos that you think that's the one I want to publish wherever or keep. That doesn't mean you should delete all the others.
Right.
Maybe a few months later you find photos that you find even better as the one who stood out clearly at the beginning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned that. Right at the start with the phone, I deleted many pictures on the same evening just because my phone was too, how you say?
The capacity was too
full and mm-hmm. too much and everything.
Yeah.
But with the digital files on a SD card from a camera, you really just need an external hard drive mm-hmm. to keep that mm-hmm. store and yes. So when it comes to the editing, at the beginning I over edited my photos a lot. Not all of them I published somehow, but I just realized after time when I'm sitting there for 15 minutes or a half an hour editing one photo, it could be several reasons for that. Maybe the photo isn't just good enough, you know, and I try to compensate with editing something that isn't there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's totally cool. You that's a learning curve, or at least not especially a learning curve, but a curve to find yourself and your process.
Yep.
Nowadays I take photos, I'm maybe much more critical.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have something that I really like, then it's not because I like it because of the editing, or I don't like it because of the editing. Then it's just a photo that I like. And mm-hmm. then I just try to, I don't know, make it simpler, maybe. For example, when you have the photo, a scene, whatever, you shot it, and there's something disturbing the picture. Let's say half of a trash bin on the street or something,
mm-hmm.
and you see a way to crop that without destroying your initial composition, then crop it for me, mm-hmm. you know, then mm-hmm. I would crop that away because I want to lead the eye of the viewer on that scene that I want to show and not let it be interrupted or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes this isn't possible, so then let the thing there. It's no problem, you know.
mm-hmm.
I do color correction mostly, where, for example, and that's another topic when I had to calibrate my laptop's display.
Yep.
I wanted to really be sure to see what the camera saw and not because every display has a different output, right?
Right, right.
It's a complex thing, but I try to. It's hard to describe to correct the colors in a way that they don't go on my nerves.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain
not when you too when distracting you look, maybe or distracting
yes that
or,
too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I try to not edit a photo with the latest trends or the latest filters or anything like that. I want my photo to be... when I like a photo, I want it... I hope I like it in a year from now or in 10 years. So I want to edit it without being trendy or something that loses itself over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's hard to describe somehow.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, color corrections, straightening up maybe, you know. I think that's it. I don't know. Making maybe the shadows dark, making them as my eye saw them, you know, and not
mm-hmm.
not overexpose everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sharpness is not even that important for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't go and make anything. I did that at the beginning, of course. But I don't use additional sharpness or anything like that. It's
mm-hmm.
Because you know the old movies or the photographers that I got to know over the last years, they shot on film, and grain and even blurriness it can be so much of a factor that plays into what you want to tell or the story
mm-hmm.
that you want to see and
right
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. So I want to stay on the process a little bit longer, but not so much editing process, but go back to when you're photographing in the streets. So when you know, you probably heard, and I brought that up in previous podcasts too, because I'm always curious about that. You've probably heard the metaphor of the fisherman versus the hunter.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, and you know where the fisherman is basically staying, finds maybe he or she finds a great composition and just patiently waits for the light and maybe some people to walk into the frame, so to say, right? So
yes,
for the fish to bite. And the hunter is just walking around and just looks for his, you know. For his
prey,
so to say, exactly. Thank you. Yeah. So, do you see yourself on one? You know, I know those are simplifications, of course, and really concepts. But do you see yourself on one side or the other side, or is it a mix for you? Where do you? How do you go about your street photography?
It's probably a mix, but I would say I'm. At least 80 or 90% a hunter.
Okay.
If I had to clarify that with those two options, yeah. But it's also a mixture because so I don't have the I would say I can't wait somewhere for 15 minutes or something like that. I'm not built for that.
Yeah.
So yeah. Because I would think yeah I'm sitting here and waiting for something. First of all, it's very constructed, and not that there's anything bad with that, but it could be around the next corner something happening which I would miss if I wait mm-hmm. on the other place for 15 minutes. But there are also examples for something in between, because maybe one time I wait for the bus, and there is this ad, this big ad of a woman with certain colors on her outfit or something like that, and I don't really see that thing, or I'm concentrated to it, but a certain person walks by it and I see the connection with colors or I don't know, whatever hairstyle or clothing, and then I shoot. You know, it's not, but that could be right in the middle of hunting and fishing, because I was there anyway waiting on something, but not for photography but to get home, for example, with the bus. And the combination of this person walking by and the ad in the background gave me like a lightning, and I shot. And most of the time it's nothing, but sometimes it is something with this method. It's not really a method because it's spontaneous, and I try to have my camera always on me around my neck. So, yeah, I couldn't decide. Maura Hunter, if I had to.
If she had to, So I have a question about your images have a consistent look, although you're using color and black and white, but you know, you do both. But do you tend to use a similar focal length for your work, or do you tend to vary that?
First of all, thank you. I don't see the connections a style or something or a look that is true where my work, but sometimes people say that I just don't see it. But yeah, I love to work with a 50 millimeter prime lens, and we're not talking high end stuff. I use the same old affordable Sony, a 2 actually. But I love a 50 millimeter, but also sometimes I have a 35. Or even a zoom lens, which goes up to, I don't know, 200, I think. It depends. It depends where I am. And yeah, it depends on the surrounding, I think.
Yep.
If I'm in a tourist area or something, I am easily with a 50 millimeter. When I think I don't want to intrude, you know, then maybe I go more for a zoom or even a wider lens and crop in the end, you know. Most of my photographs you see on Instagram, for example, are with the 50. Yeah,
the 50. Okay, got it.
Good question, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about a section from your website, which is called Stories. So one of the stories is called Into the Night, then Nightlife, an Ongoing Project. So I'm curious, you talked a little bit about photographing at night, and I know you have a lot of photographs taken at night, but how did the project start? Did that coincide with you getting into street photography, and did you plan it as a project, or is it something?
That's an interesting question. No, answer is no.
Okay.
I never planned anything. No, it's the problem with labeling that I have. And this is not just in photography or in art, especially in art and photography, but probably with all parts of my life or life in general. I didn't know. You see, I have this selection. The landing page is basically a selection of photos, all mixed, day, night, black and white color. So I was thinking about how could I show more of my stuff without making it a mess. So I thought I should maybe find the connective tissue. And in this case, it's because I love shooting at night. It has a certain magic, and people are there because they want to, and not because sometimes they work at night, of course, but mostly it's out of joy or out of emotion in general. And that's very, very attractive to me. So I just bundled them up, you know, with like keywords in my mind, nightlife or night, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. I could have made. I was thinking so many times to delete that section stories because it's not really a story, you know, not mm-hmm. really. I just don't have a better. It's just for the lack of a better word.
Better term, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I could make another one with just black and white or with just photos during a snowstorm or, you know, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just I created it to show more. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. And so we'll link to that in the show notes for our listeners. And so they can check it out. I think it's a cool section. So I think it's fun to look at those pictures and, you know, to kind of look at them and together, I guess, as a story. So I think it can make sense.
Oh, thank you.
But,
that's motivating.
You know,
but
you know, yes, even that, right. It's a concept. I actually did talk about concepts a few episodes ago. So
interesting,
even that is a concept, but, yeah, well, good. So I have a few more questions before we wrap up. So one is, are there some photographers that you're influenced by, you know, maybe not necessarily Instagram photographers, but, you know, just maybe master photographers that you're influenced by or that you're just really looking up to that, you know, you may want to share with us.
Yeah. So, I wanted to say good question, but all your questions are good.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know about that, but
no, it's great. It's great because I didn't. Everybody thinks about that, but when you ask something like that, it's totally you are confronted with now say it, you know, and.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult because now it's difficult to when I was starting out because, like I said, I don't have any ideas of names or master photographers or celebrities or whatever. I had no names in my head. But someday I made this one picture. I don't know if it's still on Instagram. And it's very simple. It was on holidays. It was a rainy day and I shot through the rainy window. The car outside was standing outside the window and it's a pretty bright white picture with a few red dots where the lights are and focused on the raindrops falling down or dropping down the window. Mm-hmm. And like my friend advised me to, she said I told you about her. The one that was convincing me to publish my work on Instagram. Yeah. She told me, "Hey, that's very Saul Leiter." And I think she didn't believe me at the time, but I said, "Who is Saul Leiter?" And then I went to Google and obviously he's very famous for his, how you say that? I don't know if there is a term, rain shots on the street, you know,
mm-hmm.
or even
shooting a lot of layering. I think he does a lot of layering.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. And there are a few pictures of his with raindrops dripping down, and funny enough, I watched this one video a few months later on I forgot the name, but I'm a very big fan of his. And he's a photographer on YouTube, and he explained to me and to his audience, of course, this phenomena of not remembered also of seeing art and being inspired by it without knowing it consciously. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I must have seen Saul Leiter's work. I probably have, you know, most certainly I have before I knew his name or looked at this work consciously. Now I have 3 books of his. And yeah, also it's a technique often portrayed in movies, focus on one thing and then fade the focus slowly to the thing you actually want to show and all that stuff. So yeah, that was my first contact with a name. I felt a little bad because it meant my photography wasn't really original. And that's cool because, you know, the curve. So I went out and bought a book of his, then two books, and now I have three. There are others I really love. There is Nan Goldin, for example. It's a little bit a mixture of documentary and street, because she shot a lot of her surroundings and you know, life and street life also, her friends or family. And I have a great book of her work, and it taught me, for example, that it's not the most important thing to have a totally clear and sharp shot. You know, it's the emotion that needs to come through. I don't know if you know her works. It's absolutely great.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few great artists. Yeah, I watched this documentary about Meyer a few months ago. It's great stuff, really.
Yeah, very inspiring.
The list is probably endless.
No, those are some good ones for sure. So, Bastian, for photographers who are just getting into photography, so I'm shifting gears a little bit, and maybe perhaps specifically street photography.
Yeah.
What kind of advice would you give them? What are some of the things that you would tell them, maybe based on your own experience and starting in that genre?
Maybe the first advice, don't listen to advice. I don't know. And if you do, maybe don't listen to elitist advice or trends, or, you know, there are people out there who would tell you for a good photograph, you need to have this or that or achieve this or that. And like with the sharp or not sharp topic, it's art, you know. You have to decide if you want to construct a product which you have a clear vision of and you want to sell that, or at least like I said, create that and construct that, or you want to go out and make art somehow. And it may sound self-important, but I think it's a progress. When we're talking about art, you can't be at the point you will be in 10 years right when you start off. Right. And this progress is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of artists, may they be painters or musicians, is a great example. You know, they start off, you know, like the 20 years a band has when they are famous. Take any band, you know. They make their first albums and they make the last album someday. Also filmmakers. And in that time, they experience so much stuff. You may like the first one, or you may like the recent one best, but their art is their life, and it's a progress. It's a process. Yeah.
It's a process.
Yeah. Evolution somehow. Yeah. And I think, let yourself time. Good things rarely come on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Thank you. And so a couple more questions. So
sure, yeah.
What are your artistic plans for the rest of the year? And maybe since this year is almost over, also maybe next year, what are some of the things you're thinking about for your street photography work?
Yeah, it's a difficult question, because the last months with all the COVID stuff and everything, I'm not really interested in, and I'm not really interested in shooting people in masks, you know. That's a little bit a problem for me. you could play with that, of course, and make it the main theme, and then it would work. Or even if not, the photos still work. I see of other people, but I'm not drawn to it. You know, I think especially facial expressions are so important, timeless, and unique. So to cover up half or more of it is it's a crime for me, for my photography. And I understand the necessity of it, but it doesn't play into my work very well. So yeah. I don't really have much plans. I'm very motivated to try maybe another subgenre without people. Mm-hmm. I would love to. I started this project where I, for example, at night, just make, I play with lights, freehand, totally not overexposed. Just try to, I don't know, the flow of the light with the movement of the camera, you know, with a long time shutter speed and and stuff like that would interest me, where it doesn't depend on people that mm-hmm. much. I'm still interested in that, of course, but yeah, mm-hmm. that's something I really would lean into, although what I will lean into mm-hmm. next month, I mm-hmm. think. Yeah.
So you're thinking more in the maybe a little bit more into the abstract.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
okay.
On the other hand, too, I would love to have a model sometime and to work out a really a series full of expression or mm-hmm. strong expression. May that be a male or a female model or whatever. It's mm-hmm. just something where you can be the director, you know.
Right.
And you don't have to see it happen on the street without control. It would be great to do something where you are in control sometime. That's alluring.
Last question. So where can people best find you online?
You mean to see my work or to get
in contact? To see your work, to get in contact. Yeah, both, I guess.
That's my website.
Okay.
bastianpeter.com. Or at Instagram, of course. You can write me on my contact sheet on my website, or you can write me on Instagram. It's no problem. I'm really looking forward, or I'm very happy about any feedback. And yeah,
okay,
sure.
Instagram is the same handle, or what's the
Bastian Peter was somebody else had that, so I had my second name in there. It's Bastian Roman Peter. It's a bit long,
Instagram.
But yeah,
that's your my Instagram. Yeah. Okay,
it's linked on my website. And
okay, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, Bastian,
great
thank
questions,
you very
man.
Much.
It's what yeah. awesome. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so
me.
Much. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for enduring my long answers.
No, that's perfect. It was great. That's, okay.
It was really
bye-bye.
Fresh. I thank you. Bye.
All right, this wraps up our episode with Bastian Peter. Thanks so much for listening, and talk to you next time.